people took this idea an awful lot further. And they took this belief in the primacy of the inner spirit, if you will, of every individual in such a manner that it would preclude any notion of a uniform national church, which both the Anglicans and the Presbyterians in Scotland had wanted. So this idea that that God works through the private consciences of individual persons would, of course, be completely antithetical to any kind of national church. Moreover, this idea of the autonomy of the individual conscience also implied a radical reduction in the power of the clergy over the individual, a feature which was common to both Protestant and Catholic churches in early modern Europe, that there should be religious experts who tell people what they ought to do and believe. A second key idea of these radical Protestants in mid-17th century England was the sense that there was an urgent need for further reformation, especially a reformation of people's daily lives, a reformation of their manners, to eliminate sin and in order to establish a godly society. As time passed, the radical demands of the sects and their subversive political implications and their subversive social implications would ultimately, as we're going to see, push the political nation back into a kind of conservatism. And these ideas, although they may not seem very radical to us now, were for the 17th century extremely unusual. To take one example, the Quakers, or the Society of Friends, in the 17th century were very different from the pacifistic and respectable religious community which they later became. The Quakers carried the Puritan emphasis on the primacy of the individual conscience much, much further, and they argued that what their consciences told them were right in terms of thought or action, whatever their conscience told them was lawful, regardless of what a church or a minister or anyone else decreed. Quakers often refused to doff their hats in the presence of social superiors, and they had a habit of heckling parsons during sermons and forcibly disrupting church services. Now, again, this may seem relatively innocuous to our more present, you know, confrontational age, but we need to keep in mind that the early modern era, Europeans were held together by really powerful habits, powerful norms of political and social deference, and for someone to challenge them was seen as deeply subversive. Even more radical than the Quakers were the so-called ranters, who seem to have believed, most of the evidence is actually from their hostile critics, they seem to believe that God's salvation is open to all believers, and that sin, which is the negation of God, cannot even exist. One ranter actually claimed that there is no such act as drunkenness, adultery, and theft in God. Sin hath its conception only in the imagination. What act soever is done by thee in light and love is light and lovely, though it be that act called adultery. No matter what scripture, saints, or churches say, if that within thee do not condemn thee, thou shalt not be condemned. And this man, a certain Lawrence Clarkson, actually practiced what he preached, and traveled around the country, sleeping with one woman after another, all in the service of God. Now, often interwoven with the religious radicalism, and gaining its force really from the same aspirations of creating a godly society, was a strand of secular radicalism. We've already seen the leveler demand for a massive widening of the franchise to elect parliament. Still more radical in the secular realm than the levelers were the diggers, led by a man named Gerard Winstanley. And the diggers were more or less communists, pretty much full-blown communists. Winstanley, for example, called for the total abolition of wage labor, and in particular of private property, which he saw as the source of all conflict, domestic and international. In 1649 and 1650, Winstanley and his fellow diggers actually began to dig up, hence the name, and cultivate unused wasteland, and they set up communes in several communities throughout England. Needless to say, most members of English society were absolutely outraged and indeed frightened by these radicals. And I'd now like to turn to the politics of the regime that was created in England with the execution of Charles I, that is to say, the politics of the Commonwealth and the Protectorate. To have executed the king and to have abolished the House of Lords were really very radical acts. But what is interesting, in a sense ironic, about these acts is that they put power in the hands of political revolutionaries who, from a social point of view, were basically rather conservative. And what we're going to see is that this would create all kinds of internal political contradictions within the English realm over the 1650s. But before turning to those internal matters, I'd like to turn at least briefly to external matters, because before the Commonwealth could do anything about internal reforming, it first had to ensure its security. And this returns us at least briefly to what I've called the British problem, or the problem of multiple kingdoms, the fact that the English crown was also lord over Scotland and Ireland. To turn to Ireland, what is striking about Ireland during the Civil War is that for all the hysteria the rebellion generated in 1641, Ireland remained a fairly secondary concern during the war itself.